Now, we're looking forward to Sunday, the 7th of September, because we are going to London Town. It's part of our annual visit to the London Irish Vintage Club Day. It is at Tyrconnell Gales, Berkeley Avenue, Greenford. And you should get along if you can. You know, there's a lot of people actually travel over from, not just Donegal, but those are the people that I'm interested in, that travel over to it because it is a lovely day out. And, you know, accommodation is... You can fly over relatively cheap, and accommodation is pretty handy as well. Derek Ryan is going to be playing Hungry Grass, Slim Attraction, Johnny McGovern, and others. And as I say, it's on GAA grounds, and it's a wonderful day. Anytime we've been there, the weather is always lovely as well. I hope I'm not jinxing it, but it's a fantastic day out. So if you are listening or working or living in and around London, I really would suggest you get along to it. It is like being, and maybe this isn't for everyone, it's like being in a field in Convoy, or it's like being in a field in outside Ballyshannon. It really has that wonderful... it has that wonderful feeling that you can only get here, if that makes sense. And it's great. And brilliant acts as well. Derek Ryan, always a crowd pleaser. And there's lots of stalls and stands. And if you like your machinery and you like your music and you like your farm animals, we've thankfully got some Donegal folk and people from all around the country that are doing very well over in London, working in construction and all that type of stuff. And they bring a lot of their construction vehicles, and there's some amazing old cars. It's just a good old day to donder about. So if you're over there and you've never been, I'd strongly encourage you to go along. We're going to be broadcasting from it as well, so you can come along and say hi. We're doing the show different. If you've heard it in the past, we're going to a more, it's going to be like an outside broadcast like you'd get here, if you know what I mean. Far more structured, more guests and all that kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to that. Is that, what time is the OB at? 12 to 2? Right, 12 to 2 on Sunday, the 7th of September. So listen in if you can, of course, because we'll be on the radio here on from 12 noon on Sunday, the 7th of September. But if you can get over, or if you're over, come along. You'll have a fantastic day. It's just 15 quid to get in, and it's great value for money. There's all the usual stuff, food and drink and what have you on site. So, as I say, get along if you can. You will not be disappointed, or just listen in. That's the, and also to what this event does, and Brendan Tiny Vaughan is very key to it, of course. It supports a number of charities every single year, be the Irish charities or charities working in Britain, St. Luke's, Stamp on Suicide, Stamp Out Suicide, HCPT and Air Ambulance Northern Ireland are the four chosen charities. And we'll be speaking to reps of those charities on the day as well to find out a bit about the work that they do and the importance of it. Right, Pat Mellon is CEO of the Irish Citizens, the Irish Senior Citizens Parliament. Pat, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and to all up in the Northwest.
It's great to have you on the show. Right, talk to me about this national consultation then.
Greg, ourselves, the Irish Senior Citizens Parliament and Age Action, are coming together with funding from Community Foundation Ireland, and what we're looking at is building a stronger voice for the ageing sector. And I suppose for a long, long time, Greg, Ireland would have been considered one have a young population, but that has changed drastically and very rapidly. Like in 2011, there was 530,000 people over 65. That's in 2011. But in 2031, which is a little over 5 years away, that'll be well over a million. You know, life expectancy is increasing. And the ratio of working people, it was roughly four working people for every person aged over 65. By 2050, that'll have changed down to two working people. So the implications on that, you know, are fairly drastic. And one of the things the organisations have come together was, oftentimes a lot of organisations talk to people, but we want to hear people to talk to us and tell us mm-hmm. how their voice can be better heard, how we can get a better balance and a better cross-section, and what they need. And by doing that, we can communicate, as the largest advocacy body in Ireland, we can communicate that to the powers that be and to make the rules.
Yeah, and we have a lot of work to do, because I can't predetermine the outcome of the survey, Pat, but I know from sampling people on this programme, they might feel that, you know, they're forgotten. They might feel that the health service is not being adapted to cater for their needs. They might feel that not enough is being done to address isolation, be it rural or urban. The fact that older people seem to get blamed for problems in the health service or housing, for an example. You know, they're hoarding housing, or they're the ones that are attending the hospital sick. You know, a lot of the, and we can't afford to look after older people because of an aging population. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if the older people that we're talking of, the demographic that we are talking of, are often framed as some sort of a burden, which makes me puke, to be honest with you, Pat. But I wouldn't be surprised if that was a sentiment that came across in a survey like this. So there will be positives in there as well, don't get me wrong.
I suppose, Greg, the big thing is what we're wanting to see, what the survey is about, is how we can get that voice to that. And you're dead right. I mean, I'm going to be very clear. Very recently, in a major newspaper, what I would call, there was an idiotic piece, and it was about taxing under-occupied houses. Mm. You know, it's a different angle from what they talk about, people rattling around in houses. People who worked all their lives when times were tough and bought their house and paid for their house. And now somebody's saying that you're a burden because of this. The other thing that comes across very clearly...
Can I just make one point in relation to that, by the way? The first step on that is controlling what people can do with their private property. And in as if this is the solution to the housing crisis, rather than building more homes, taxing people or changing policy to prevent them using their private homes for what they choose to do. If that's allowed, if that becomes a norm, all of a sudden bedroom taxes can come in. Next thing you know, you're taxed. If you've got a 3-bed house and you live in one of those bedrooms, you know, you'll be taxed out of that house. It's not, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I think the foundations are certainly being laid at the moment that could allow that to happen into the future. And what you use is a social crisis to actually turn society on these people. And that's how you get policies over the line. So I wouldn't see that as an idle threat or an idle warning, because, to be honest with you, if you look at the way things are going, I believe we're not a terrible distance away from that. But, Pat, you were going to go on to other things. My apologies, but I just wanted to make that crystal clear that we're no one scaremongering here.
No, Greg, and you're absolutely right. Just to finish on that, like, the first thing, I mean, that kind of concept is a nationalisation, if you want to call it, of people's houses, if it goes down that road. And that's a part of a dictatorship, nearly. Do you know? So moving on the second thing was the burden on the health service and everything else. The whole idea that just because people have reached 60 or 65, that they're in this sector that needs care. Everybody from cradle to grave needs care. Mm-hmm. It is not something specific to older people. And that's one of the problems. Nobody wants to listen to the voices of these people. And if you take it, somebody that's 60, 65, they're retired, one of the things they have now is time. The other thing is, the day after you retire doesn't mean you have forgotten everything. You have knowledge, and they have their houses, and they have the resources. So this sector of society have time, knowledge, and resources, and nobody is listening to them. And that's what this is about. We need to hear the voices, and we need, as we advocate on a national basis, and we, for us to advocate properly, the stronger the voice and the more representative the voice we have, the better we can do that.
Mm-hmm. Now, the survey, for the most part, is online. We'll talk about how people can access this, if there's any issues in relation to that. The URL is one that's quite long, and I'd have to spell it, and we're going to share it on our socials, right, because that's the easiest way to do it. But the format of the survey, is it drop-down menus? Is it empty boxes? Pat, you know, obviously, I'm not asking you to go through it. Give us a sense of it.
From an online point of view, there's only 6 questions in it.
Yep.
It's a tick box in most of it, you know, and you can put in your words. So it is, that is the reason we've done this, to keep it simple. Now, on that again, you can do it online. You can email us. We've already sent out over 250 hard copies. We've had nearly 350 replies. But if you contact Mosaic that are doing it, or ourselves, office at seniors.ie or pat at seniors.ie, we'll happily post it out to people, or to groups, whatever it was, to fill it in. The other thing is 01203 0737 01203 0737. People can ring that number and do it over the phone.
Do you think there's a role here for groups, if they don't already, groups that work with older people, to sort of spread this amongst the network?
Absolutely. Book clubs, you know, active retirement groups, residence groups. We have residence groups that are members of the Irish Senior Citizen Party. Anything at all, that's what we want to hear. It's very easy to hear from people that you normally hear from. We want to hear from those people, people who are dealing with people maybe, as you said earlier, rurally isolated, people living alone that might not normally. And it's just a very simple, if somebody had those questionnaires and say, listen, how do you feel, Greg, about this? How would your voice be better heard in that respect?
Okay. All right, listen.
And it is that's what we want to hear.
We'll list off all the contacts on our socials as well. Pat, thank you for that. Pat Mellon, CEO of the Irish Senior Citizens Parliament. The survey is open until the 19th of September, but like everything, best to get into it. So there's a bit about yourself, question 1 to 4. You're asked to identify what county you're from. Have you ever engaged in public policy activity? You can answer that. And then your views. Have you ever felt listened to when it comes to public issues affecting older people? What are the main things that stop older people from participating? You just click in your answer. You can add in specifics there as well. What kind of activities would you be most comfortable doing, and so on and so forth. It will not take you long. It's very, very simple, and I think it's very important that older people's voices are heard, and also whatever the findings of that are actioned upon as well. Right, busy on the phones. A caller says, I'm not opposed to a united Ireland in the future, but we are no way near that point at present, no matter what Piers Doherty says. Let's get the 26 counties sorted out first, and we're not remotely close to that either. A united Ireland at present would financially cripple the 26 counties at a predicted cost of $20 billion annually, with fairy tale land in Sinn Féin living in it. Those figures have been discounted quite broadly, that it would cost that much. It's like everything in life. If we waited to get the 26 counties in inverted commas perfect, well, then there would never be united Ireland, because that utopia simply does not exist, and it will probably never exist in the structures that we have nowadays. So as I say, those figures that you quote there have been disputed, and there are strong arguments that a 32-county Ireland, you know, might be beneficial. But we also have to think of the people of the six counties and the representation they're receiving in Britain at the moment. You know, there is a disinterest amongst certain parties in Northern Ireland. I think there's a big political shake-up going to happen in Britain at the next election, and where does that leave Northern Ireland? Politics moves quite quickly, and I'll tell you, with the right set of circumstances, you wouldn't know where things could go. Dear Greg, Irish people need to have at least 3 kids to maintain the population. The world is aging, no youth. People are having less kids. It's not just in this country. The falling birth rates are one of the biggest threats to sort of societal collapse. Not all countries and cultures are seeing a reduction in birth rates, but certainly in this country, America, some of the Asian countries, European countries, they certainly are. A caller says the bed capacity is the problem at the hospital. The increase of population is outnumbering the bed capacity within the hospital. No beds for elective lists at the minute because of emergency intake, then beds, no theatre lists. Of course, but what you do is you plan. You plan for the future. So you plan that if you're going to invest in a facility, you make sure we know where the population is going. You plan for that. It's like Little Angel School. You know, they didn't plan for how many children would go to that school. They built this fantastic school, and first year, hadn't even opened yet, 10 kids have no place for them, at least 10 kids. Like, imagine spending millions on a new development that should be fantastic news and not planning for future capacity. And we need to be doing that in the health service. We need to be doing that in all sections of society. Just wondering if the neurologist is appointed yet for Letterkenny. I can't answer that off the top of my head. I was listening to the piece about the buses and was wondering about bus escorts, and could that be considered? I can't bus escorts. I don't see how that fits into that piece, and I'm not being smart or anything. I just don't see how that fits into that piece. I know bus escorts and the role that they do, but I'm not quite sure how that would address the... All Sarah needs is for the bus that's passing by her house to pick her kids up to go to Maville School. It's not complicated. They've been forced to move 17 kilometres because their house has been knocked down. That's the nearest property that they could get. They hope to be back on site in their old house within a year or two. Why would you move the children to a different school when there's a school that goes past the house going to their old school, where their cousins are, where their friends are, where they went to Nenra with other kids that are there? You know, I mean, the defective concrete block crisis is a complicated one, but switching a kid from one bus to another, you know what I mean? It shouldn't take a media campaign to do it. But anyway, we'll see. The good people at Bus Éireann hopefully will pull through for us there. Good morning. Listening here, Read Little Angels, potentially not opening on time. Well, unfortunately, it's not opening on time. It is just not good enough. A lot of these children have not had the luxury of summer camp social activities. Their parents would have been preparing their children for back to school. The lack of information or knowing when children will be back is very disrespectful. It really is. It really is. And the way I look at issues like that, and this is, you know, why I'd be really quite passionate about it and important that it gets the platform it deserves. If there was 20 schools in Donegal that were affected like this, it would be a national crisis. The phone lines would be hopping and every parent in the county would be screaming that this is not good enough, and quite rightly so. The fact that it's one school, it affects those children and their parents and families equally in a smaller number. But that doesn't mean it shouldn't get the same sort of support and push and anger where it's necessary and drive. Just because it's a smaller group of people, it doesn't mean it's any less significant to them compared to if it was every school going, member of the population. Do you get where I'm coming from? And that is why I think we have to be there to back them up, because for them, it's as important as it would be for everyone if every school was affected. I hope that makes sense, but sometimes I think we get a little bit locked into our own lives and things are okay. And I think collectively we need to continue to sort of back those whose situation isn't okay, so they know that we're here, we care. And that's what we're trying to do on this show, and that's what we try and do every single day. Right, now let me take a break. And delighted to welcome onto the programme Cathy Donaghy, author and journalist. Cathy, thanks so much for your time. Oh, I haven't got Cathy in. Cathy's joining me on Zoom, is she? My apologies. That's my fault. I'll be getting to Cathy in a moment. I dropped the ball. That's okay. She's not in Zoom anyway, so you dropped the ball as well, so we're all good. I have an opportunity to catch up on some of your comments, though, as well. Morning, Greg. I agree with you 100%. These children deserve the same as children going to mainstream schools. I think a lot of people would help out, not just the parents. Indeed. And listen, if there was a call to action, who's to say, you know, I don't know what type of work needs doing, but who's to say that we couldn't, you know, get the people together? That being said, it depends on the work. It has to be done to certain standards and signed off on and all that kind of stuff as well, I'm absolutely certain. Hi, Greg. Would you please give a big shout out to all the staff and nurses at Medical 5, Letterkenny University Hospital? A member of my family was a patient there recently. They were so kind, much appreciated. And in case it requires any clarification, when we talk about the health service and issues at Letterkenny University Hospital, we do so in the full knowledge that the majority of workers down there are doing the very best that they can do in very difficult circumstances. And we're not being critical of them. In fact, what we're doing is trying to campaign so they have got better working conditions, more resources and more staff, so that they can continue to do the brilliant work that they do. And I know some of them, even if they're under pressure or what have you, perhaps aren't comfortable with the hospital being talked about all the time. But unfortunately, it is life and death. And we really do need to talk about it when these stories pop up. So Cathy Donaghy, author and journalist, is with me. Cathy, how are you keeping? Great to see you.
Great to see you, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Now, you've written an article and highlighted, I'm not sure if you wrote it, but you certainly have been quoted in the article, my apologies, calling for an urgent cleanup of Lough Foyle. Talk to me about what you've witnessed and what needs doing in your view.
Okay, well, I mean, this story that you're talking about, I was interviewed for it. I suppose it emerged last week. I got a call from a neighbour of mine to say that he'd been over the shore. I live along Loch Foyle. I live in Redcastle, just at the joining of the two townlands of Drung and Redcastle, if you know it, along Loch Foyle. So the river, Drung River, splits the townlands. I'm the first house in Redcastle. So the neighbour said to me, there's a terrible smell over the shore. And when he went over to investigate, that there were heaps of non-native oysters piled up at the shore opposite the shop. People along the road, the main road, might know it. It used to be Brendan's shop along there. It's a big convenience store there. So I went over to have a look. And I actually couldn't believe what I was seeing, Greg. Piles and piles of dumped non-native oysters. Now, they weren't oyster shells. They were stinking to high heaven.
So rotten flesh, effectively.
Exactly. Yeah. And the flies were swarming around them. The smell was atrocious. In fact, a friend of mine afterwards, I put up a post on social media, on my own socials, just to say, look, clean it up. You know, this is not good enough, you know. And a friend of mine had said she'd been in the shop on that Sunday morning and didn't actually realise where the smell was coming from. But now she understood. So,
And I get the impression, looking at the pictures and videos that you took and posted, excellent, don't get me wrong, but they don't tell the full story, do they? And imagine when you're standing there, you know, with the sights and the odours, that it really comes home how disgusting this is.
Yeah, well, that's the point, Greg. I mean, social media can't convey the smell, which was enough to make you gag. You would have had to nearly worn a scarf over your mouth to cover the smell. It was, and the flies were swarming around. That it was a really hot day. Now we've the rain now and the temperatures are cooled a bit. You can imagine the rotting smell in the heat and the flies swarming around in this lovely stretch of shoreland. My father was just reminding me the other day that in his day, my dad's in his 80s now, he reminded me that this is a stretch of the Foyle that they would have called the White Sands when he was growing up. So it would have been very much an area of recreation for people of that vintage, let's say, for people who would have gone out maybe to have a swim or to, you know, to go fishing along the shore there. And it was crazy. It made me actually just, as well as being outraged that somebody would dump these things here, I just felt deeply, deeply sad that this, that the Foyle is just seen as something to be used. You know, yeah. It's and not cared for. I walk it every day with my dog, and I don't just. Yes, I'm a local, and yes, I love it as a place of the wild birds over there are actually incredible. And if you walk it regularly, you'll know that it's home to beautiful Brent geese in the winter. There, it's a special area of conservation along stretches of the Foyle, actually, Greg. Mm. Not a lot of people know that it is actually under the Birds Directive, has been designated by our National Parks and Wildlife Services as a special area which needs special, you know, care.
But anytime you dump something like this en masse, it is going to disrupt the ecosystem because you're introducing something that's not supposed to be there. It is a complicated one because there are people that are concerned about the amount of oyster trestles in Loch Foyle, the regulation of it, the lack of regulation.
Yes.
All that being said, as you quite rightly say, people aren't doing this for sport. There's money in this. Mm. And littering, which is what I would see it, and I don't think I'm opening myself up for anything here, littering, dumping this stuff on the shore is irresponsible. It's actually disrespectful. It shouldn't require an article and a conversation on a radio station to sort of resolve it. It's sickening.
Yeah, it is sickening, Greg. I suppose one of the problems really that has led to this, I suppose, issue that we're having now, and this is not the only issue with pollution, because unfortunately a lot of these trestles, I participate in shore cleanups along with the Redcastle Village Association. Many locals go out there and gather up the detritus and rubbish from this industry that we pick up in bags. Rubber bands, mesh casings for the trestles. It's pretty filthy, actually, you know, and the pollution that's caused, the amount of plastic that's along that shoreline. I mean, one of the problems is, I guess, that this is an unregulated industry. There is no governance around how much is too much. local people have not had a voice to say, you know what, nobody was ever asked what's going on here. There is no licensing.
The thing is, though, Cathy, I mean, if I was operating in, and just to give people an idea of scale, I saw a quote from Councillor Tony Crossan, 100,000 trestles between Colmore and Moville. But if I was in an industry that I was making cash in and it was unregulated, I would not want to be drawing any attention to myself to strengthen the argument for regulations, i.e. dumping stuff on the shore. This just shines a spotlight on an industry and opens up the regulation conversation as well. It's not good business, whomever is responsible for this.
Yeah, I mean, dumping aside, I guess what we have is a lacuna in the law over the ownership of Loch Foyle. Just a total gap in what organisation can be in charge of a licensing regime. And without that, what we have is a free-for-all and an essential colonisation of Loch Foyle, which is the start of the Wild Atlantic Way at Muff to Greencastle. Now, on a low tide, if you look out to your left on Loch Foyle, all you see is a factory yard. That's what it is. I have to call it that.
Yeah. And the byproducts of that, and if there's lobster pots out there as well, you know, there's plastic associated with that, the bands that they use for the lobsters and the storage pots, all that type of stuff. You witness that as well, do you? I think you referenced this already, washing up on shore, as well as this unsightly factory that's exposed at low tide.
I'm not aware of lobsters out there, Greg. Maybe there's lobsters out there somewhere, but this is about non-native oyster trestles.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Right? So, and the cages that they're in, they are like it's like a metal structure to support the case that they're in. Oftentimes the bands that attach all these things together, I don't know how it works, but the bands wash up on our shore.
That's where the bands are coming from. Okay.
And the cases themselves. I mean, if we went over there any particular week, if we've done a shore cleanup between here to Maiden Rock, from Redcastle foreshore along the coast over to the bar at Redcastle, you would fill black sacks. Black sack upon black sack of rubbish.
Okay, well, the council have been notified. Hopefully they take some action on this. Hopefully this is a wake-up call to those in the industry. They're shooting themselves in the foot in doing this. It's not going unnoticed. It's certainly got local traction, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's picked up nationally at some point, because it is puke. People don't like it. We were celebrating how Bundoran, according to Iobal, is really nice and clean at the moment. Killybegs Harbour, the same. You know, the people of Inishowen, the people on the banks of Loch Foyle deserve the same sort of clean environment, I think.
Yeah, Greg, just one point, just to make the point, and my only view on this is the Foyle. Who speaks for the Foyle?
Well,
Foyle deserves better. It's a river that runs through all our lives. Anybody who lives on its banks deserves to have a voice in how it is treated and who speaks for the Foyle. That's what I want to know. I want to speak for it, you know. Okay. I do. I want to lend my voice to saying this is all our river. It'll be here for a long time after we're all gone, and I'd love to see it protected.
Yeah, okay. Many will join in that, I hope, but people have to sort of get up and at it as well, like you do. Thanks, Cathy. Cathy Donaghy, author and journalist there. If you've something to say in relation to that, 086 60 25,000. Greg, could Greg please highlight people putting their car lights on, considering the weather was foggier this morning, and I would urge people to please slow down. There's a couple of things going on. People stick their fog lights on, don't switch them off. It's more of an annoyance. I don't think, maybe if it's raining and there's no fog, it could be problematic. But, you know, a lot of modern cars out there, and I know people in my own family who have options of auto lights and they don't use them. You know, most modern cars now, over the last 10 years, have an auto lights option. So the lights will come on automatically. You know, use that, avail of that. Why not? You don't have to have the auto dip and flash on if your car has that, but you can certainly have the lights coming on. So you've got your daytime driving lights or lights greater. They're automatically switched on. It's normally on the jog wheel on your stick. Not everyone has it, but those who have it, avail of that, because that caller's right. We're getting to that time of the year now. Rightio, I'm going to take a break because when I say I'm taking a break, by the way, a break is what you call a group of adverts. Maybe people think that I constantly need a break and I go and sit down somewhere. So the break refers to the adverts. I'm not taking a break. I sit in the seat until the break's over, right? So this is a commercial break and I'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Now, we learned this week, but we know it anyway because the statistics are generally available, that one in three road deaths in Ireland this year have involved people aged 30 and under, with the youngest being a four-year-old boy who died in County Westmeath. Two six-year-olds also died in separate road tragedies, unfortunately, in Donegal and Galway. Ireland has recorded 110 road deaths so far this year, and Road Safety Group Park noted that 37 of those fatalities involved people aged 30 and younger. We're joined on the programme by Debbie Mullen, who's chair of the Road Victim Support Northern Ireland Donegal, and Debbie, unfortunately, knows all too well of the tragedy of losing someone in a road traffic collision. Her beautiful son, Keelan, lost his life in 2013. Debbie, thank you so much for joining us. And thank you, too, for, you know, being a voice on such an important issue, having been so directly affected yourself. It's very valuable. Thank you.
No, thank you for inviting me along.
I suppose when we talk about road tragedy, you know, people don't want to focus on particular age groups because it feels like blame. But I mean, I'm not having this conversation in the context of any blame whatsoever. But we're seeing figures, we're seeing a demographic, and we can't ignore it. We need to be doing more.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose in the aftermath of my own loss, I really wanted to get involved in reducing road traffic collisions and ultimately deaths on the roads. And that's why we within Road Victim Support Northern Ireland Donegal really believe in education. And we really have to put more emphasis on that to try and educate all road users about personal responsibility. Because if we can do that, then hopefully we can reduce, you know, those deaths on our road.
Yeah, it seems consequences, it's a difficult sort of, it's a difficult message to get across. The consequences of certain driving behaviours, the loss of life, the impact that has on families that remain and friends and communities, or, you know, the more often serious injury, life-altering injury, injuries, bangs to the head that change people's personalities forever, lost limbs that you know, reduce people's mobility or independence. You know, it seems that we don't fully take seriously the consequences of bad driving.
No, and I think a lot of that is because when something horrific like that happens, not many people tell their story in the aftermath of that. And that's where, you know, we tell from a lived experience model, you know, what that's actually like, the impact of such a serious injury or a loss of life is for that person. And I think more and more has to be done on that area, because when we have such a traumatic experience, you know, really nobody is really in the position to talk about it. You know, some people find it very difficult, and right to the end of their lives will maybe not even, you know, process that properly. But we have found that volunteers within our organisation really want to come forward and be voices for families and hopefully making change. And when you talk about consequences, it's not just physical consequences that are there, but we do know that, you know, our policing here in Northern Ireland and our Garda Síochána and Donegal and further afield are trying their best, but let's be honest, the resources are limited. And therefore, you know, we have to look at if we can educate people that while our speed limits are there for a reason, it doesn't mean that we need to drive to the ultimate of that speed limit. We have to look and read the road and be more mindful of our actions. And it is our actions that causes these consequences, unfortunately.
Yeah, and our decisions. 30% of young drivers killed in crashes in 2023 had a blood alcohol concentration, I beg your pardon, they were under the influence of alcohol effectively. In drugs particularly, we're seeing in stats now, often weekend detections, you'll see drugs in people's systems more than you might see alcohol. Quite rightly so, the mental health crisis is front and centre in schools, particularly secondary schools. You will walk down the hall, there's signs on the walls, they have wellness classes, you know, sometimes 3, 4, 5 hours of wellness classes in a week. There's a big focus on sort of trying to educate and reach young people in that space. And we had a caller on a little earlier on that's wondering why we're not doing that in relation to our roads. Why aren't we saying, right, you know, all of these deaths, every single one of them, bar the Shannon, is avoidable. Why aren't we sort of making the road safety message an everyday part of your 5 or 6 years of your most formative years?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And I think the why is resources. Our organisation have, in actual fact, contacted all the secondary schools in Donegal in recent times. We have put a programme in place. It's called the Drive to Arrive programme. And it is specifically aimed at that 16, 17-year-old, 18-plus, where we are trying to give them the education and the resources about, again, using the roads properly. We are a great advocate for the Fatal Five, which is very much pushed here within the PSNI in Northern Ireland. And that is where we are trying to raise awareness about, if you can follow the Fatal Five, you will keep yourself in a better place regarding safety on the road. And that Fatal Five is not to ever drive with alcohol or drugs within your system, not to use your mobile phone while you're driving, not to drive over the speed limit, but also not to be careless and taking risks on the road as well, because unfortunately we do that. And believe it or not, people are still not using their seatbelts appropriately when they are in the cars. And, you know, we have got, again, voices of families wanting to come forward to share their experiences. Something as simple as if someone had wore their seatbelt, mm-hmm. maybe they would be alive today.
You know, like, and I think that's really important. And this is kind of something I was trying to hint at a little bit earlier on. When you are young, you're not thinking of death. And quite rightly so. Why should you? Be happy, be young. But, you know, OK, so if someone's own mortality is not a factor and it's worth the risk and it's something of a buzz to speed or whatever it might be, let's try and reach them in a different way and say, you know, you want to be young, you can have fun. Don't be thinking about dying. That's not even on the radar. But just consider what your actions, the impact they might have on you or others around you. You know, most kids love their mums, most kids love their dads, their granny and their granddads, and they wouldn't want to put them through the heartache. You can relate that message. So it's not about saying grow up and have a 40-year-old head on 15-year-old shoulders, but I think we have to try and reach them in a different way, because we can't scare them into saying death, 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 you could die, you know. I don't think that's going to work on young people, but I think if we kind of make them think twice in a moment where a decision is made and they think about, oh, mom or dad or my brother, that maybe that could be the breakthrough, Debbie.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, whenever we deliver our programmes, you know, we are bringing real life stories of young people who have lost their lives. You know, my son was 17. We have someone else who is 18. We have another person at 23 years of age on the cusp of their life. And we are saying the most amazing skill that you can have at that age is to learn to drive. It gives you freedom. It gives you independence. And we need that. We live rurally. Mm. So we are saying that, but we are also saying you don't want to be in a position such as I, where, you know, I unfortunately went to the scene of the collision that killed my son, and he was in a body bag. And that is an experience that I wouldn't wish on any young person's parents to ever go through. But that's a stark reality. And that's what we talk about. We talk about our factual events that happened. And we do in such a way to make people sit up and take notice, yeah. Not to traumatise them, but really, if we can tell a story that people remember, there's where hopefully they can take something like that on board. Mm. And when they are out with their friends or even on their own, you know, they can think before they take an action on the roads.
Yeah, I mean, you come across, you know, Snapchats or whatever, and the music's blaring in a car and there's, you know, 5 people in the car and you can see the people in the back don't have their seatbelts on. And, you know, on the face of it, they're having fun.
Yeah.
And they're not thinking potentially of what could happen, you see, and that's absolutely it. And they can still have that fun elsewhere, but it's just saying in that moment, go, right, we are, you know, an inch of rubber away from this turning terrible.
Yeah, Absolutely. And that's a message that we want to put across. You know, unfortunately, my son never got to take his friends to McDonald's in his car, you know, and that really feels sad for me because he never got to do that. And unfortunately, he died 3 weeks after his passing the driving test. You know, but the thing is that is on the main event. They want to go out. They want to be with their friends. And why not? But you can do it in a safe manner.
Yeah.
And that's what we want to put forward to them with our workshops that, you know, driving is an essential skill. It's part of who we are. We live in a culture now with, you know, car culture is very prevalent, especially in Donegal. And we've been highly involved with the Donegal Rally this year. You know, and it's about promotion of safe travels and safe driving on our roads.
Debbie, you know, we need to get the likes of you in front of as many young people, I think, as is possible, because you get it. You can speak from your tragic experience, but you also get it, what it is to be young and the opportunities and how you can enjoy that safely. You know, you're not you're not trying to rob people of anything, right? So
no.
I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, when you're in front of a class or whatever, right, and, you know, you're articulating this to them, you must see it on their faces that it's landing, that you can almost see the brain being a little bit reprogrammed, that they get what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll give you an example. I was in Buncrana at a school with 400 children a few years ago. And there was someone there from the Garda Síochána, there's somebody there from the emergency services, and they were telling, you know, what it is for like for them turning up to these experiences. And let's be honest, the kids just looked at somebody in a uniform and they didn't find them relatable. So I stood up then a few minutes later and I told them, I'm a blow-in, I'm not from your country, I'm not from your area, but you know, I'm here and I'm just telling you a story from a mammy, my son, and how wonderful it was that he passed this driving test on my birthday. The best present he could ever give me, because guess what? It stopped me taking him to Gaelic practice, it stopped me running him into his wee job. It was brilliant. Mm-hmm. So that's how I start my story. And then I tell what happened on that fateful Saturday morning when he was driving into Limavady for a crusty loaf of bread. As simple as that, running an errand. His dad had put on the bacon to make breakfast and we asked him, excuse me, to go in to get that loaf of bread. We watched him as he took off with his indicator on, going down the road. And unfortunately, 3 miles down the road, unfortunately, he hit black ice and he wasn't able to control his car and it went into the tractor and a slurry tank and he was killed instantly. And at the end of me telling my story, because I don't want my story to be their parents' story, I introduce them to a photograph of my son standing there as proud as punch on the day of his school formal, all suited and booted, loving himself, you know, and why not? He was loving life. But unfortunately, he no longer has a life to love anymore. And that's the message that we want to put across, you know, that unfortunately for him, inexperience took his life. He didn't have the experience to control his car, you know, but that can happen to any one of us. But if we can start a grassroots level from when young people are beginning to start to learn to drive. But let's be honest, we have really bad habits as well, and we need to call ourselves out on this. And that's why we deliver this program to all ages, and it can be adaptive. And we want to get into community groups, organisations, and, you know, any sports organisations. And most importantly, yes, schools, because we feel that if we can start and we can bring it up with them, we can leave a lasting message.
Yeah, indeed. And we're so lucky to have people like you that are prepared to do what you do as well. Thanks, Debbie. Really appreciate it. And as you've pointed out there, these statistics were released this week, and they're not statistics, they're real people, and real loss. And it's focused on the under 30s, but that's just one demographic. There are many demographics, but we invited Debbie to speak on specifically about these figures. We appreciate that we all have to check ourselves. You know, you see, Debbie, overall, this is just written as an article and it's not a criticism. Overall, road deaths in Ireland are down 3.5% compared to the same period last year. And it just brushes over. it just brushes over the devastating loss and those ripples, the school friends. They're in their uniforms, they're doing their guard of honour, mum inconsolable, dad inconsolable at the coffin, the community emptying out of their homes into the church,
yeah.
You know.
And, you know, as you rightly said, these are not just statistics. These are real lives gone from this world forever. But the impact of that loss stays. Because, as you said, it's like the pebble in the pond. It's the families, the friends, the school friends, the work colleagues, you know, the community as a whole. They are grieving. Mm. And there are many communities right along the country who are grieving right now. Mm. And they're not getting the proper support in the aftermath of such a traumatic loss.
And even the brilliant work you're doing is part of your stage of grief as well.
It's trying to take a negative from or a positive from a negative. Yeah. And, you know, I had a choice. Do I lie down to this and I be absorbed within that grief? Or do I take something from this, you know? My son didn't die in vain. You know, he lost his life, but his mammy found a voice that she could now use to help other people. Not just in a support role, which is what I do, I'm a counsellor, but also in an education role so that we can make real life differences and change. And, you know, we live in a society now that, you know, there's all sorts of behaviours that are out there that are normalised, like taking drugs and alcohol while driving. You know, people normalise it, and it's not just young people that think that's okay. Yep, yep. So it's so unfair to target that young age. But we have to try and move away from this normal behaviour and, you know, correct, you know, poor behaviour, really.
Yeah. Okay, Debbie, listen, we're very lucky to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your time. Take care. That's Debbie Mullen, Chair of the Road Victim Support Group Northern Ireland Donegal, who very sadly lost Keelan in a road traffic collision, as outlined by Debbie, his mum, in 2013. Okay, that's another show in the bag. It's been a busy one. Lots of different stuff on it. We'll give any follow-ups that we can to some of the stories we've been talking about tomorrow. Hopefully, we're hoping for some breakthroughs on some of them. We'll let you know. That's all from 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. So for me, Greg Hughes, Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, assisted by Katie today, have a wonderful Wednesday.